Hi, I'm Francis Hellier, and welcome to my brand new podcast, Metaverse. This is a podcast for the future-minded, a series for anyone on the hunt for the next big thing and all its possibilities and implications. This is Tomorrow's World Today. With each episode, I will chat to those at the top of their fields, from futurists in crypto and space travel to forecasters in business and tech. Together, we will ask the question, what's next? Today, I'm joined by Simon Erickson, founder and CEO of Seven Investing. During a highly successful career as an advisor and investor, Simon rose to become lead analyst for Motley Fool, an investment guidance company with headquarters in six countries. After leaving in 2020, he then founded Seven Investing, a startup which offers customers seven investing tips and ideas each month, provided by their seven lead advisors. He is often described by colleagues as a rockstar analyst with a dash of Texas charm. Simon, it's great to have you on the show.
Francis, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for that introduction, and especially the part about the Texas charm. I think I like that part the most of all.
I mean, it's quite a wonderful way to be described, Simon. So let's start at the beginning. Can you sort of give us a little bit of insight as to how investment piqued your interest and how you got started in that?
Certainly. Yeah, I started as an engineer. I was a chemical engineer that went out and did some time in chlorine production blocks. And kind of that led me into the dark side, as my engineering colleagues like to call it, the commercial side of things, where I transitioned into technical sales. This is where you're out there, you're shaking hands, you're traveling to the same Courtyard Marriott hotel room 4 days a week. It feels like that's your room after a little while. And, you know, it just was kind of a life on the road of seeing what was going on out there, seeing which way the wind was blowing, seeing what new innovative things the companies were wanting to develop, whether that was organic agriculture, whether that was deep sea drilling, whether that was personal care products. Everybody wanted to create something that was new and ahead of their competitors because they could charge higher prices and get higher margins for it. And so it kind of started my love of innovation. You know, that's followed me through my entire career of looking at where the puck is going, so to speak. I went back and got an MBA in on entrepreneurship from Rice University here in Houston. I worked for a little while at one of the largest oil companies, developing the renewable energy strategy, actually, and working closely with the venture capital side of the strategy and planning of how can you actually bring in technologies to do that. As you mentioned, Francis, I then went on and worked 7 years for the Motley Fool. I ran a service called Motley Fool Explorer for them, where every month we looked at a new innovative trend in the market and actually chose a stock recommendation from it. And now I'm in my favorite chapter of all, which was in March of 2020, we founded Seven Investing to each of our advisors, give them a chance to find their very best idea in the stock market every single month. And now we're enjoying putting out the buffet of options for individual investors to choose from, because we think investing is a personal thing. We don't want to manage anyone's money for them. We want to say, hey, here's the research that we've done. Now it's in your hands to pick which is best for you.
Okay, so I'm sure our listeners can appreciate the Texan charm right there. Let's go back to Motley. Yeah, let's go back to Motley Fool. Can you describe a little bit more about your involvement and what that journey was like?
Sure. Yeah. So I started as an analyst on the Rule Breakers publication that they had there. That's kind of David Gardner's growth style investing. We kind of didn't pay as much attention to things like valuation ratios or, you know, traditional metrics that a lot of the stock market was looking at. We certainly were not focusing too much on quarterly earnings. We were more of saying, okay, what is something really innovative that's taking place out there? And why is this the right company to do that? And so started with Rule Breakers, worked on several different services there. Really kind of the highlight of my career at the Motley Fool, though, was running for 4 years, Motley Fool Explorer. And that was just, it wasn't just reading, you know, looking at things on the internet, but attending conferences, industry conferences, chatting with PhDs, chatting with commercial leaders. I mean, to really get a feel for what's going on out there, you've got to talk to the people that are kind of pushing the envelope at the front of the wave. I really enjoyed that. It was humbling. It was humbling to see all the really cool things that were going on out there. And to get a glimpse of that as an investor really kind of influenced a lot of my style.
You founded Seven Investing in 2020, so it's fairly new. Tell us about that journey and what was the opportunity in the market that you spotted there?
It was really neat. The opportunity to answer that first was when people would realize that I was an investor, they'd keep saying things that kind of bothered me. It would be, oh, the stock market is too hard for me to get involved with. Or, oh, I've got just somebody who manages all that for me. Or, hey, Simon, don't you know that that's rigged against you? You know, these things kept coming up time and time again. And I said, well, why do we think that? Why do you think that the stock market's rigged against you or that it's too hard? And there really wasn't sufficient answers. It was more of just that there was a lack of education about how to invest, how to even get started investing. But more importantly, what stocks should we be looking at? As we've seen from kind of the YOLO, you know, meme stock, AMC and GameStop from earlier this year, there's a lot of excitement for growth style investing. People want to invest their money, but I think that there needs to be a little bit more guidance and education on what are good stocks versus what are flashes in the pan, which can burn you at any given time going forward. And so what we've done with Seven Investing is not only myself, but I've put together a team of really incredible advisors. We're looking at very different things, Francis. Whether it be disruptive innovation, whether it be artificial intelligence, whether it be financial services, whether it be biotechnology, it's hard to be really good at all of those at the same time. And so we've tried to put together a team of experts that really kind of specifies in different markets so that we have a whole bunch of options for people to choose from.
That's really exciting. I'm interested about, you just touched on the sort of meme stocks that obviously become, you know, the tabloid craziness of the last few years. Is it just a question of people wanting to get into the space, seeing these options available, and then suddenly learning actually, maybe sometimes the hard way, but actually learning about investments the hard way? Does that make any sense?
It does. Actually, I'm not so dismissive of what's going on right now with Wall Street Bets and Reddit. I actually kind of like that it is, in my mind, empowering a lot of people to start looking at stocks. The GameStop scenario is one that there was manipulation of that stock. There was no true catalyst for a company like GameStop, which was selling bricks and mortar retails for video game consoles. This wasn't a company that was going to quintuple its revenue year over year. There was no clear catalyst. And so, of course, if you're hedge funds and you want to, you know, place bets against a company out there, that might be one that's kind of safe to go short. And it was very heavily shorted. Now, the thing that they didn't see coming was that there was going to be the power of the crowds, where everyone was going to be buying into this. All of a sudden, you have a lot of buying pressure as opposed as a counteraction for the selling pressure. We all kind of know the story of what's going on with GameStop. But I think that was information that was proposed out there, and people jumped on it, and that was an opportunity for investors. The problem that I have, Francis, is that it was very short-term in nature. No one knew what the right price was for GameStop, and they kept buying it all the way up. And eventually, someone's going to get stuck holding the bag. Because at the end of the day, the company itself didn't just all of a sudden transition itself. It just had more buyers that wanted to buy the stock. And so what I'm looking for is trying to do the opposite of that, actually, is find out the companies or the stocks or the technologies or the market trends that no one's paying attention to yet, but they're really important. So if we can get in early and we can find those companies, those are the ones that I believe are going to 10x your money over time.
So many people see investing as something that you're either really good at, or you can't learn, or something that can be learned. You know, it's one of those things that I know you're prioritizing as Seven Investments. You're trying to teach your customers how to invest their money better. How did you come up with this idea, and how did you realize this is a skill that people can actually learn to improve themselves?
Yeah, well, Francis, investing is similar to any other skill or any other knowledge that you obtain out there. It's something that compounds over time. Even Warren Buffett, probably one of the greatest investors we've ever said, has said publicly, hey, I got a lot better as an investor after my 70th birthday, after my 80th birthday. I mean, a guy that has compiled that much wisdom is still reading, 8 newspapers every single morning. I mean, there's always more wisdom to obtain. Investing is the same thing. I think that it's perhaps challenging, maybe, because you're not going to jump in on day one and just become the world's best investor out there. But you can get started and buy your first stock and start following along with earnings announcements and with, following the annual reports and the proxy statements. And then after that, maybe you start listening to the conference calls. Maybe you start digging into the management team, looking at their backgrounds, looking at what the opportunities are going after. And then maybe the layer on top of that is you actually go through the annual reports and look at the R&D line items, or actually go on and look at how they're hiring, what positions they're hiring for in their company. I mean, all of this is kind of an additional layer that you keep adding to as an investor, as we consider this to be a lifetime journey. It's not you get into GameStop, you get out after a month, and then you're done investing for the rest of your life. There's trillions of dollars that are parked into retirement funds. And I think that's great for people that want to be passive, but we should be asking more questions, first of all, of what is in those funds, what's in our 401ks, or whatever the equivalent is in different countries. But even more than that is why wouldn't you want to start investing on your own? Brokerages are costing zero commissions now. There is no minimum balance. So even if you put in $100 and you're not paying any fees for the stocks you're buying, that's the great way to start. And Seven Investing is a combination of the education of that, everything that I just described, kind of how do you look at stocks and be an investor? But even the step, the big step, the big next step of okay, what are your best ideas right now, Simon? That I think is challenging because there's thousands of stocks to pick from out there. We're trying to come up with our top seven every month and then actually get people to look at those a little bit more closely.
So when we look at innovation, I know this is near and dear to your heart as it is to mine. When we look at investing, where are the big trends here? Where are the opportunities going forward from a sort of innovation standpoint?
Oh, goodness, Francis, how much time do we have? That's what I would call a two-beer conversation, right? We could be here all day chatting.
I'm in.
One of my favorite topics, of course, disruptive innovation specifically. You know, you had chatted that you are a technologist yourself. You have a background in the technology industry. And we were chatting right before we started filming about blockchain. Obviously, there's a whole lot going on in blockchain technologies right now, embraced by the corporate enterprise as opposed to just directly to consumers, which has been very interesting to see the Bitcoin chapter play out. Actually, right before this call, if you can believe this, about 3 minutes before I signed on to our Zoom call, I put an investment into an Ethereum mining co-op. It's been founded by some friends of mine. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But this is kind of awesome. Something that is a huge long-term trend I'm very excited about. In addition to that, I think that healthcare is transforming. Now, we've talked a lot. I'm certainly your listeners have heard about CRISPR and gene editing. But let's start taking the next chapters beyond that too, of what base editing and what prime editing is going to be, so that we can avoid some of the double-stranded breaks that are inherent with gene editing, at least in this first phase of it. There's some fantastic technology that's being rooted right in the genome, right in DNA itself. And so DNA sequencing has gotten so affordable right now, people can look at a patient's specific DNA and optimize treatment conditions for them, which is fascinating and completely rewriting the rules of medicine. Advertising. I mean, I think one trend I'm really excited about right now is the move from television, which has been just linear and regional in so many decades. Of, okay, you live in Houston, Texas, or you live in London, England, we're going to figure out kind of subjectively what that area of the world is watching, and then we're going to place advertisements and set the rates accordingly. Whereas now we're in a world where we can see exactly what shows that Francis wants to watch, how he wants to watch the Metaverse podcast, like we're podcasting right now, he wants to follow the Seven Investing podcast, whatever it is. And then you can place specific individualized ads for that, for any publisher out there, on a per viewer basis. How is that going to rewrite the rules of those ad rates and, you know, how advertisers are actually creating their advertising? It's a completely different ballgame for that as well. And then fintech. I mean, you've seen kind of Square renaming itself Block. You've seen a lot going on in financial technology as we're kind of transitioning still from these bricks and mortar locations, these physical payments. It's all going into the internet now, especially in developing economies like India, who have actually, you know, kind of discontinued some of their high denomination currencies, paper currencies, because they're trying to push it online where it's much easier to track for tax purposes. Things like that are really interesting right now as the world continues to embrace technology.
Now, you mentioned your recent investment just a few minutes before for the podcast in Ethereum. What's your take generally on cryptocurrency? Where are we going to end up?
I mean, it's got huge advantages. It's just that everyone's afraid of losing their money. Right, there's no recourse if somebody goes in and hacks your account and takes all of your Bitcoin. You can't go to your bank and say, hey, I lost all my money. The exchange is like, hey, we're sorry. That's a risk that's out there right now. You've got, of course, the offline wallets, you know, the digital wallets for cryptocurrencies. You try to keep it protected as best as you can, so they're not always out there that somebody can get into. But I think that's really safety is the primary thing. You see companies like Coinbase that are really addressing that head first. And say, hey, if we're going to be having mass market appeal, we're going to keep the fees. We're going to keep those a lot higher than our competitors. We're not going to have to worry about stuff like that. The embrace of these is fascinating. It's really interesting when you look at the crypto economy and how you can actually use a piece of plastic in your wallet to pay for things with Ethereum or with Bitcoin. That's the same as a credit card that now appreciates in value a lot quicker than the US dollars that are in your bank account are going to. And if you believe that the supply and trade, our supply and demand trade imbalance is still existent for cryptocurrencies, as I do. Bitcoin caps out at 21 million, but the embrace of the world, the demand for it is still very much intact. I think there's still a whole lot of potential for these.
Now, if you were to give some advice for someone who's never actually invested, not just in cryptocurrency, but in any stocks, what would be your sort of key takeaways? What would be your main lessons to someone that's never really ventured into that world?
I think I could use an example for myself as a mistake first, maybe to warn people away from this, is when I first started investing, I really just wanted to kind of look at what I thought was trending, what was exciting, and where what was innovative, without thinking about the business side of it so much. And so kind of one mistake I made was in solar panels. I really believed in, you know, renewable energy background. I saw the potential for these. I said, okay, let's go out and invest in these companies that are going solar, manufacturing solar. And of course, at the time, I didn't really do as much homework as I needed to. Saw that, you know, China was dumping solar panels for far, far lower prices than the United States companies were able to charge. There was an imbalance. There was a whole bunch of supply. There was not as much demand. There was a huge regulatory gap, you know, and how are we actually going to get these on a state-by-state basis? Terrible investment, terrible decision at the time. Great innovative theme, but you've got to look at kind of the business side of it too. This isn't just about going out and buying innovative technologies. It's about who are the companies that are building businesses on top of those and then protecting those as well. If you have an innovative technology, plus a really, really good business leader that knows how to harness that, plus a way to protect yourself from everyone else doing exactly the same thing, that's the winning combination that you should be looking for out there. And I think I've gotten a lot better at honing those skills as an investor.
Now, as we look forward, I mean, this podcast is called Metaverse. The Metaverse itself is very exciting, Web3, all the different opportunities that are coming down the line. Have you thought about what the Metaverse means to investing and whether or not things will be transformed within that space?
A little bit, Francis. I think you're probably the expert on this because it is the topic and the title of your show. But I do think that it takes a Mark Zuckerberg to put the first foot in the ground and say, hey, we're going all in on something like this. When you've got someone of his stature and the resources that Facebook, now Meta Platforms, has, that's a pretty big statement that's going to get a lot of following. I know that Facebook has put 10,000 engineers globally on the Metaverse, and that's a really big statement.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, obviously, from my perspective, it's important that we keep the decentralization and we keep making sure that, you know, we stand up and we fight our case. We need to keep an open Metaverse. I think that's really important. But I think you're absolutely right. It does take someone like that stature to introduce this as a concept and start those realistic conversations about what can be had. If we look at what people invest in now, what do you think people will be investing in the future that just doesn't really exist at the moment?
Oh my goodness. No doubt that the two biggest words 5 years from now are going to be quantum computing. There is no doubt in my mind that this is something that's catching on. Everyone just thinks this is R&D science project.
So I was hoping you were going to say that. So I'm very glad you did. So that's good news.
Hugely important. And you know, this is not just me kind of throwing darts. This is from years of MIT conferences, speaking with experts. Worley right here in Austin, Texas, this is actually a really good friend of mine that I chat and have drinks with, and I go up and visit him at South by Southwest, just seeing the work that is going on in quantum right now, not just on the hardware side of it, not just on building the quantum computers themselves, which has taken a really long time, Francis, to even get something that's super cooled, you know, near absolute zero. You can't have any interference when these things are doing their thing. But then on top of that, you've got to have the UI. You've got to have the layer to make these understandable, to define a business problem that you could not solve before. And then make it understood by your business people and your engineers and your marketing people. I mean, there's some really tough challenges out there to solve. Logistics, drug development and protein folding, you know, just it's things like the optimization problems, you know, superconductance, space economy. I mean, all these that have got zillions of factors, zillions of inputs. It's impossible for humans to keep up with all of that. We can fine tune 3,000 tabs in Excel if we want to and use AI the best that we can, or we can define the problems, put them into a quantum computer to solve in something that might take days rather than thousands of years. But the hardware's got to be perfect first, and the UI has to be understandable. And there's a lot of attention on this going right on right now. There's a lot of concerns going on right now in terms of cryptography and, you know, the protection of the internet and all of our banking and healthcare information is all out there. What if you could crack all of that that's encrypted in the way that we have it protected today? Or what if a computer is fast enough to now start cracking those encryption codes? There's a lot of concerns about stuff like that for good reason. But again, if you've got a really, really fast, completely different architecture computer, that's fascinating. That's going to open up so much meaningful work for the world that we didn't even have access to before.
Simon, what does the future hold for you personally and for Seven Investing?
For me personally, I'm really kind of enjoying being on the wave of innovation, I guess. I've always gotten paid my paycheck is always dependent on reading the tea leaves and what's next. That's what kind of keeps me excited. I like going to conferences. I like being the dumbest guy in the room and taking notes from postdocs and PhDs and trying to piece together what they're talking about first and foremost, and then say, okay, what is that going to mean for 3 or 5 years out for the companies that are going to be publicly traded off of this? Seven Investing, it, for me, is just a fascinating project. I'm really loving this because even just the team that we've assembled here, which is fantastic, also has a lot of PhDs and graduate degrees on it, but we look at things differently. We think about risk differently. We think about technology differently. We think about competitive advantages differently. And to get in a room like that with somebody who's got 3 decades of healthcare experience and has been a CEO for a healthcare company, with someone who was an inventor and ran the R&D of an inventing a company that was issuing a lot of patents in Australia, you know, in informational technology, and then also a biotech and then a financial services, AI and machine learning, somebody who's doing work with the government of the United States 20 years ago. It's fascinating. It keeps you intellectually very stimulated at the things that you're looking at and gives you actually a lot of optimism about where the world is heading. We are progressing faster today than we ever have before. And some people might be scared by progress and by technology. You see now robots that are moving around and having expressions on their face, and that's kind of terrifying. But on the other hand, you see a lot of the problems that we've had, especially in healthcare, that are now solvable. And I think that that's kind of really fun for me, and it keeps me interested in everything that we're doing right now.
Well, Simon, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. It's been fun and inspiring, and I'm very grateful for your time. So thank you so much.
Thanks very much for having me. I had a great time, Francis.
You've been listening to Metaverse with me, Francis Hellier. Thank you to my guest, Simon Erickson, for a fantastic conversation. Tweet us at MetaversePod with any suggestions or feedback. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please do share a link on social media. You can sign up to receive an email when the next episode drops at our website, metaverse.fm.